we are at the start of Perek Hey, chapter 5. Devorah's poem about the victory over Canaan, which is going to teach us all sorts of things. It's going to add, as we've already said, to our understanding of the story itself. Because the way it was presented in Perek Aleph was really very bare bones in terms of knowing what it was that happened. We know about the mission that she has, where she tells Barak that he should go to war. He should take 10,000 people from Naphtali and Zebulun up to the mountain, and Hashem is going to arrange everything else. Then we had Chever HaKeni moving from east to west. Whether this happened at that time or happened earlier in time is not clear from the story. And then we find the actual war breakout when he brings his group up. Well, sorry, we find that he doesn't want to go. He insists to Devorah that she has to go with him. Devorah says, fine, I'm going to go with you, but you won't get glory in this way. She goes along with him. He gathers the 10,000 men. Sisera sees what's going on, understands that there is a war afoot. He brings his forces as the general of Canaan, and they wage war. And there's really very little here about the war at all. When you look at what happened in Perek Daled in chapter 4, it just said that Hashem threw their camp into confusion. We drew on some things that we're going to see now in the fifth parak to understand what was the cause of the confusion. But in chapter 4 itself, it didn't say. And then we immediately shifted from there into Sisera fleeing. Right, Barak kills all the people who are trying to flee, but Sisera goes in another direction, and then he is lured in by Yael and killed by Yael. We know almost nothing about the war from Perek Daled. So Perek Hey is going to give us more information about the war itself. It's going to give us more information about the state of the Jewish people at the time and some lessons that we can learn. And it's also going to give us more information about Yael. And then at the end, which I don't think we'll get to this week, but at the end we get insight into Canaan and sort of Canaan versus the Jewish people. So we are up to Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4 in chapter 5. And yeah, again, as I said last week when we started reading this poem, there are many layers and many ways you could read every line. I am not going to go through every way you could read it. It would make it really a terrible learning experience. We just, you know, I unpacked a little bit of it on Pasuk Bet, sentence 2, and the different approaches to the phrase Bifrah Fraot B'Israel. Was it that the enemy breached Israel, or was it that Hashem punished Israel? And then the different ways to read that sentence. So I don't want to do that again. We're not doing that for the entire parak. So she said, in those opening sentences, one thing that was clear was that everybody should sing to Hashem. And we noted, sing to Hashem, not to human might. But I'm going to sing to Hashem. And then, Pasuk Dalet, sentence 4, which is where we pick up. She says, Hashem, b'tzeischam miseir. Right, we started on this last week, actually. God, when you left Seir, b'tzadcham misedei Edom, when you stepped forth from the field of Edom, Eretz ra'asha, gam shamayim natafu, the earth shook, the heavens it dripped water, gam avim natfu mayim, the clouds dripped water. Harim nazlu mipnei Hashem, the mountains ran, as in like liquid, from before Hashem. Zeh Sinai mipnei Hashem Elokei Yisrael. This is Sinai. They did this before Hashem, God of Israel. So last time we noted, I think, the pasuk in Vizos HaBracha, it's Devarim Lamed Gimel, which says that Hashem arrives at Sinai from these different places. It describes Hashem arriving at Sinai from multiple places, and it's possible to contend that that's what she's referring to here. When she says Hashem came forth from Seir, he came from the fields of Edom, it could be all of this is a description of the glory of Hashem at Sinai. That's one way to read this. And what she's trying to say is, we used to have wonders. When we had Matan Torah, when Hashem gave us the Torah at Sinai, that was an incredible experience. And that's one way to read it. A second way to read it is that it's talking about the battles that the Jews fought against these different enemies on their way into Israel, and how Hashem protected them and took care of them, and again, there were great wonders. Whichever way you read it, the point is fundamentally the same. which is, those were the days. Back then, we had miracles, we had wonders, people were afraid to fight against Hashem. Take a look at source number one, please, that I brought you on the sheets. Take a look at the way Rashi says it. He says, Kach Amra Devorah. This is what Devorah said. Kasha hi haTorah lifrosh mimena. It's hard to separate from Torah, meaning it's tough when you do. V'tova hi lidabek ba, it's good. Torah is good when you stick to it, and things will be good when you stick to Torah. Shari b'mora u'b'gvura nitna, because Torah was given with awe and might. It impressed everybody. U'lakach nimsru Yisrael bi'ara ovdei kochavim al prisha samimena. And that's why we were then turned over to the enemy when we left Torah. U'kshayis nadu la'asog ba. And when the Jews volunteered, and that's going back to the phrase volunteering that was seen earlier, b'his nadev am, in the earlier verse, then, no sha'u, then they were rescued. So Rashi reads it as providing a moral arc. She's trying to say, when we were with God, like the giving of the Torah, everything was great. We strayed from it. We fell into the under the hands of Canaan. We come back to it. Things get better. That's a simple read of it. And Abarbanel along the same lines in source number two. Amra Devorah, Devorah said, Hashem b'tzeichem b'seir l'aseis ha-Torah, you left Seir to give the Torah. Eretz ra'asha, he just fits it into the psukim in a more clear way. The earth shook. Gam shamayim natafu baharim nazlum ibnei Hashem. And you see, as I translated there, the heavens dripped, the mountains flowed. Ki ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz kula chol mipanav. Heavens and earth all trembled before him, before Hashem. I'm going to hold the rest of Abarbanel because it's actually commenting on the next pasuk. So we'll hold the rest of what Abarbanel said here. So far, she has said things used to be good; they went bad because we strayed, and now she says, "Let me tell you about how bad things became." Pasuk vav. Bimei Shamgar ben Anas, Bimei Yael, Chadlu Arachos. In the days of Shamgar ben Anat, Shamgar, we remember, was a shofet, right? He was the one who struck the enemy with the cattle goad. In the days of Shamgar, in the days of Yael, Chadlu Arachos, the paths stopped. And those who walked on the roads, Yelchu Arachos Akalkalos, if you had to travel, you took roundabout routes. What does that suggest?
It's dangerous.
Right, they're under attack. You can't just go on the road. You have to take roundabout routes in order to get to your destination. Right. So the big question that we have to ask here is, who threw Shamgar and Yael together? Number one, chronologically, we thought that Shamgar was done earlier on. Right? They're under Canaan for 20 years. The question of where Shamgar fits, is he in the beginning of the 20, or is he even earlier, is one that there are multiple views on, but he's very clearly not around by the time you get to Yael's heroism. That's one question. What's the other question you have to ask?
I thought during Yael was dead. She defeated Sisra, so why is she thrown out of class? Like, why is she making her like a bad
okay.
Shofetet?
Well, the first question you have to ask before that, Bonita, is...
I wanted to ask, is Yael a judge? Then?
Yeah, is Yael a judge at all? Who put Yael into this picture? She's not on your standard list. Meaning, those who have an Orthodox scroll Tanakh, I assume in the back they give you among their lists and charts and tables, a list of the Shoftim. If you look on the list, you ain't going to see Yael. You will see Devorah. You will see Shamgar. I'm fairly sure that the list of Shoftim is not going to include Yael.
Isn't she not Jewish?
Yeah, we had this whole debate as to whether she was Jewish in the first place. There were those who said yes. Malbim thought that she was Jewish. But at the same time, there are others, and I think that fits the simple read of the psukim, who say no, she's not a Jew at all. It all comes back to the question of whether Yisro's descendants converted to Judaism or not. That's the, that's the key question. But it's difficult to say she's Jewish, especially given that Sisra trusts her and runs into the tent. Right? If that's a Jewish tent, he ain't going there. He's the enemy. He's trying to kill them. He's not going to trust her.
Why does it need to mean that she's a professor at all? She's describing what's just happened.
Right.
So, of course, it may make sense that she's talking about Yael.
Why?
Because she's describing the war, and she's going to get to that part of what's happening with Yael.
Right, but in the days of Shamgar, and in the days of Yael...
From there to there.
But why does she say her own day?
Yeah.
She should say her day. She's the judge. She's not shy about trumpeting herself. You'll see that very clearly.
But maybe she's just saying she's a heroine.
Like, so in the days when we had a hero named Shamgar, and now we have a hero named Yael, that could be. It's possible. We're going to look at a couple of commentaries, but you have to just think through what the questions are here. She says, in the days of Shamgar, in the days of Yael, things were not so hot, right? People couldn't travel safely on the road. And it continues. Yeah.
Maybe she didn't want herself to be associated with the bad days.
Ah, but that's kind of hard to separate.
Right.
No?
But, okay.
He says,
a poetic license in there to throw it on them. And
right.
Not so much on
and not on herself.
But when I came.
Right, well, that's the next bus.
Yeah, okay.
But Lu Frazon be Israel Chadelu. You no longer did you have Prazon. Prazon is open cities. So no longer did you have open cities. People had to live in protected areas. Ad Shakamti Devorah, Shakamti Aim be Israel. Until I stood up, Devorah, a mother in Israel. And at that point, everything suddenly changed. Everything became good. Yivchar El, and actually now she's going to go back to describe what it was that put them into a bad position. Yivchar Elohim Chadashim. He, meaning the Jewish people, selected new gods, the gods of the Canaanim. Uz then, Lechem She'arim. Lechem She'arim. Lechem does not mean bread. Lechem means milchama, war. Then war came to the gates. Magenim Yeraeva Romach Barboim Elef Bi Israel. There wasn't a shield to be seen. There wasn't a spear among 40,000 Jews. We didn't have any weapons. We had nothing, and we were under attack, all because we chose new gods. So going back through this section a little bit, where she's talking about sort of the bad new days as opposed to the good old days. She says, first of all, Shamgar Yael in those days. And now go back to the source sheet, and I'll show you two different ways to take it. Rashi in source number 3, and Ralbag in Mitzudat David go along with Rashi, say, Melamed Sha'af Yael Shachtaz Yisrael B'yamel. Yael was actually a judge over Israel. Which again, just makes it very difficult to understand what Sisera was doing, unless he just didn't know who she was, and, you know, she pretended to be some random Kanani or friendly person, and he wasn't aware, which is difficult to think. So that's a very interesting question. That goes back to the beginning of the Sefer and the introduction by Abarbanel about what a shofet is in the first place. And there are two different schools of thought. One school of thought says, a shofet is somebody who takes care of issues and is a leader in a particular region, but doesn't have the status of a king. They aren't the last word on everything, and you could theoretically have multiple shoftim. Frankly, Abarbanel was not of that view. If I remember correctly, Abarbanel, maybe he was, but I don't think so. I think Abarbanel was of the view that a shofet really is king-like. Doesn't have the coronation necessarily associated with a king. But the authority of the shofet really is sole authority over the nation as a whole, in which case I would have a hard time with this idea that Yael actually was a shofet. Fortunately, Abarbanel doesn't think that she's a shofet. But yeah, that would, it really depends on how you understand what a shofet is and the role that the shofet plays.
Even if the role of the shofet was almost like a king, weren't they in different regions, different areas of the land? I mean, Deborah came up to this area
area
where they are now. But Yael was already there,
right? So
with the Bnei, forgotten her husband's name.
Chever Akeni.
The Kenin. So they were like sort of separate from Canaan.
Right.
So maybe she was a judge,
right,
or
so again,
a leader in that.
But again, that would depend on how I view Shoftim. Mm-hmm. Are they really the national leader, or are they simply regional? Mm-hmm. In which case, I could take what you're saying as an approach. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking they also have the ear of God. And
we hope.
Yael had the ear of God,
okay,
or had the words of God, that incited her to do all of those things.
Did she?
We don't know.
The
Navi is not going to give us any indication of Yael davening, Yael speaking with Hashem.
No, I know.
No.
He's just throwing it out there, but all of a sudden, you know, inviting him in and doing all these things and killing him so courageously and so purposefully.
Right. I mean, it would fit the Rambam's description of Ruach HaKodesh, which we've talked before, you know, about, which is that when Hashem strengthens somebody to do something which they would not normally either have the courage to do or have the strength to do, Rambam defines that as Ruach HaKodesh. So, could that be? I suppose. Don't know. It's not the sort of thing where you pass gas. Like, you know, maybe. But that's all one school of thought, is that she is a shofetet. Abarbanel has a different take. And I'm going back now to number two first, to that part that I skipped, within Abarbanel. In the Hebrew, it's the end of the first line. In the English, it's the middle of the second line. In the days of Shamgar ben Anat, in the days of Yael, it wasn't like it had once been. They didn't fear Hashem, these nations. They didn't fear Hashem's might. The land did not shake from before him, to the point where people stopped traveling. Because they couldn't travel as a result of fear of the enemy. So Shamgar and Yael are being brought, not so much to talk about them as leaders in any way, but to say, in recent years, like the period of Shamgar, like the period of Yael, for which we could be defining them as heroes and, you know, using them as markers for the era, certainly. Things were not so good. And then he continues in source number 4. Lo zachra sha'ara shoftim. She didn't mention the other shoftim, the other judges, right? Because we had others. We had Ehud ben Gera, right, for example. We had Ibtzan. We didn't mention those. Lefi sha'aysa chu'asam shlema, for their victory was complete. Shamgar kills a couple of hundred of them, right, of the Plishtim who he fights. But it's not a complete victory. He doesn't throw off the Plishtim. The Plishtim are going to be a perpetual problem for us. V'zachayim o Yael, and Devar mentioned Yael as well, l'hashvos b'nehem, to equate them, b'she'ein shuasam shlema, saying their victories were not complete. Imeyot shasu tshuama, even though they did accomplish something. So what she's trying to say is, in the beginning, things were wonderful. Once you hit Shamgar's time, even when we win, we don't really win. And Yael as well, she may have defeated Sisera, but that wasn't the real victory. The real victory was not what came about when she defeated Sisera, when she killed Sisera. The real victory was when Hashem routed them, as is now going to be described. It's really, again, one of her major themes here is Baruch Hu Hashem. You have to bless Hashem. Hashem is the one who really did all of this. Or as opposed to my victory, I, Devorah. I suppose you could read that also. Okay. Good. So she says, nobody felt safe until I arose. Yes. I managed to save the day. So the Gemara picks up on this comment that she makes. Take a look at source number 5. Actually, you know what? Don't take a look at number 5 just yet. I realize I put it in there, but I shouldn't have. I'm holding off on number 5. But the Gemara is going to criticize her for doing this. But first, take a look at. Oh, I see what I did. Never mind. I thought I had included an Abarbanel that I didn't include. Now I understand the confusion. Abarbanel says, Ad shakamti Devorah, shakamti ein b'Yisrael, until I, Devorah, arose. I arose as a mother in Israel. He picks on the mother line. Remember the theme we've seen throughout this story of the women versus the men? Right? starting obviously with Devorah getting the mission to go and being the Shofetet, then Barak not being willing to go, and then continuing through with Yael versus Sisera. Sisera is the coward who runs away from the battle, and Yael is the one who's brave enough and she kills him, and then the end of the poem we'll see with the mother of Sisera and the women who are around at that point. So Devorah is playing up that theme of the mother and the woman and saying, I arose as a mother in Israel, and so Abarbanel writes, I had mercy on the nation, the mercy of a mother, and that's what gave me the courage to act. You know, the sort of the mother, the lioness being more courageous than the lion. She says, now I was driven to act on behalf of the nation.
Can you say Rahmanis? I'm saying it in Yiddish, but it sounds more than just mercy.
Yeah, absolutely, you can say that. And you know, you're going to see it at the end of the song, at the end of Devorah's song. Where does the word Rahmanis come from? What's the root? Where does Rahman come from? Rechem. Rechem is a womb. Rahmanis, mercy, is considered the hallmark of the mother. That's where the word comes from. So she describes now why we were in trouble. It's because we chose new gods. Therefore, we were in trouble. We didn't even have any weapons, and that may accentuate the miraculousness of the victory. We didn't have any weapons, and yet we were able to win. So she then says something strange. This is you get this actually before the strange part. We're not at the strange part yet. I apologize. She says, Libi lechokikei Yisrael. My heart is to the mechokikim of Israel. How do your different translations render mechokikim?
Lawgivers.
Anybody have anything different?
Governors.
It's basically the leaders, right? Various uses of it. This either means the people who create the laws, or it means the people who carry out the laws. But my heart, my message, is to the leaders of Israel. Hamis nadvim ba'am. There's that phrase again. The ones who volunteer. That's her big phrase. Baruch Hu Hashem. I say to all of them that they should bless God. That's the way Radak reads the line. That they should bless God. Rashi says, alternatively, they volunteer to lead the Jews to bless Hashem. But I think the fit of Radak and Ralbag, that she's calling on different people to bless God, is going to carry through much better. So she pauses in her description of the events to sort of have this commercial in the middle. Things were terrible. Originally, God was with us and things were wonderful. Then things got really bad because we left Hashem until I arose. And now let's all have a round of blessing Hashem. Right? I turn to the lawgivers and I say, you should bless Hashem. Abarbanel says it's the chroniclers, the people who tell the story, should bless Hashem. And then she continues in Pasuk Yud, Rochvei Asonos Tzichoros, those who ride the pure white donkeys. Yoshvei Al Midin, those who sit on Midin. Midin is usually translated as judgment. Those who sit as judges. The alternative is to say it's uniforms. Those who sit in long robes, right? Like madim for a uniform today. That's what you have.
Uniform.
Cloth. Okay. V'holchei al derech, and those who walk the roads. Sichu, you should all speak. You should all bless Hashem. Mikol mechatzitzim, from the sound of the mechatzitzim. What is mechatzitzim?
Arrows.
Archers. If it were trumpeters, it would be mechatzitzrim. That would be chatzitzrot. Mechatzitzim, those who shoot arrows, archers. From the sound of the archers, bein mashabim, between the places where you are, shoev, the place where you draw water. Sham yisanu tzidkos Hashem. There, you should talk about, and you should mention the righteousness of Hashem, or the generosity of Hashem. Tzidkos pirzono b'Yisrael. The tzedakah that he did to enable us to once again live in open areas in Israel. Az yardu l'sha'arim am Hashem. Then the nation of God descended to the gates. Once Hashem had acted. So what she's doing is she's saying, she's rallying people that you should all bless Hashem. You were so afraid before, and now Hashem has enabled you not to be afraid. You should express gratitude. Clear? Good? Okay. Now we get to this one sentence interlude, which is very hard to understand. In the middle of the song, as she's now told the story, told the beginning of the story, and turned to the nation and said, you should bless Hashem, she says, Pasuk Yud Bet, Uri, Uri, Devorah. Wake up, Devorah. Uri, Uri, wake up, Dabri Shir, speak the words of this poem. Kum Barak, get up, Barak, Ushavei Shavyecha ben Avinoam, take your captives, son of Avinoam. And then she's going to go right back to discussing the war. What happened in this middle sentence? What's she doing?
Seems like in a play where you have in brackets what like the motions that they're doing.
But what is the motion that she's describing?
Did they do that? Like when she was... that was going on? Like they were
trying to wait for the
What do you mean? She's talking to herself.
Yes, that way she's giving herself strength.
Motivation. Yeah.
So it's sort of an aside, which the audience is witness to, in which she says, all right, you know, I got to sing. Yeah. And turning to Barak and saying, you know, you should be out at the battlefield.
Barak be saying part of that?
Could Barak be saying it? Quite possibly. But what's he saying? He's saying like, yeah, Devorah, go Devorah. Like, yeah. And then what's Kum Barak? And she's saying, yeah, get up, Barak. Yeah. Notice, by the way, that business of standing up, which has also been a repeated theme here, Shakamti Devorah, Shakamti Emizah, now Kum Barak, get up, Barak. What is this? This is a hard sentence.
Maybe Barak is just standing around if he's like...
She's saying, stop singing. I mean, we assume this is after the battle is over, no?
Right.
She's not singing this during the battle, because especially because it's going to include the story of Yael.
Yeah.
She can't have that story yet.
Do you think God's talking to us?
So she's quoting Hashem. In other words, this is channeling God in the song. Mm-hmm. And Hashem is the one saying, Uri, Uri, Devorah. So that's close to what Rashi does here. Rashi takes the view that this is an expression of prophecy, and I think Ralbag also, and is a call to prophecy and a call to battle for Barak. In other words, you, Devorah, sing, and you, Barak, you know, be victorious in battle. It doesn't have to be Hashem speaking. I'm not sure that that's the way Rashi really understands it. It could be it's her speaking poetically, but it's also, it's sort of like, now I'm going to tell you something amazing. I'm about to awaken to start this song of the victory.
I think it humanizes her a little bit.
Yeah.
Because when she first said, until I came about, and I'm like, I rolled my eyes, like, oh my gosh, she's so arrogant. And then here, you're like, oh, well, maybe she wasn't so arrogant. Maybe, like, she had to push herself to do this, but she knew it was right, and Hashem was telling her to do it.
Right. So it's a good thought. The only question I have is sort of an overall question about this song, which is, there was a decision at some point to include this line. Meaning, you know, Shoftim itself, we're told, is compiled by Shmuel. So Shmuel makes a decision about what to include, what not to include. The Anshe Knesset HaGedola, the great assembly in the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash, we're told are the canonizers who make the official decision of what's in and what's out. Was it that they felt this would humanize and therefore it's important? If so, why did they take out the Ad Shakamti in the Israel? Unless the answer is that since the days of Devorah, fifth graders were memorizing this song. Like, everybody knows this song, so we're just going to keep it intact with that line. That also, I'm going to hold that question of why did they choose to include it, because what Abarbanel is going to say is going to make that 10 times worse. Abarbanel's framing of this is going to be, you're going to say, like, really? But we're not there yet.
Is it also, she's describing that you said this is after the battle, so they've won the battle. But now she's saying, well, now we've got to keep up the momentum, we've got to, like, do tshuva. This all happened because we...
Where's tshuva in this line?
No, I'm not saying, I'm saying that to myself, but, we can't just rest on our laurels, we won a battle. why did we have the battle in the first place? Because we strayed from God.
Right.
So now, wake up, get going, we've got to
right. So there's
change
definitely,
our ways.
Right, there is without a doubt that message within her poem in general. She makes the point of, we sought out new gods, and that's why we ended up in trouble, because she's a shofetet. She's not just somebody singing a song about a battle. She's teaching moral lessons. She's saying, this is not, you know, when you stray from Torah, this is what's going to happen to you, therefore you should come back to it. That's I think that's certainly part of it. But I don't think this line sort of feeds that end. The Gemara, and this is the Gemara that I started reading by accident before, source number 5, says the following, and we saw this when we were introduced to Devorah in the beginning of Perek Dalet, but that was before the summer, so, you know, I've brought it again. Im chacham hu, the Gemara says that if somebody is arrogant, they lose whatever special characteristic they have. Im chacham hu, if a person is wise, but then he becomes arrogant, chachmaso mistalekes mimenu, he loses the chachma, and they give you a story actually involving Hillel, of all people. You know, who was supposed to be the humblest of the humble, there was a story where he expressed something that was not considered to be humble, and then he forgot a halacha. Im navihu, nevuaso mistalekes mimenu. And if he's a prophet, he'll lose his prophecy. How do I know that? Midevora, from Devora. Dichsiv, because the pasuk said, Chalu prazon b'Yisrael chadelu, ad shakamti Devora, shakamti im b'Yisrael. She said, look, right, that pasuk that we read before, I didn't bother to reproduce it in the translation on the sheet. Until I arose, that's when things got better. Uchsiv, and then it says, Uri, Uri, Devora, Uri, Uri, Dabri Shir, Devora, wake up, meaning she actually lost her nevuah. She actually, you know, God took her down a peg and said, if that's the way you're going to express yourself, then you lose it. And then she's so, Uri, Uri, Devora, is like, you know, I need to get this back. I need to tune into the Nebuah again. She's saying it to herself. Or you could say that people are saying it to her. I suppose that would be a reasonable thing as well. Right. There's no apology other than including it, this line in the song. You know, including it is a message in and of itself, perhaps. The challenge of that line is the Barak ending. In other words, if I'm reading it the way the Gemara reads it, then the question is, what's the business with Barak at the end of the sentence? Why do you need to say, get up, Barak, and go, you know, take captives? It fits in terms of the Gemara's overall picture of Devorah. When we talked about the Eshet Lapidot and the idea of this fiery person, and with the way that she talked to Barak when Barak wouldn't go to battle, and she said, well, fine, I'll go with you, but then you're not getting any glory. A woman is going to win this war for you, pal. There is that harshness in the way that she expresses herself. But Avraham Ben-El's read, I have to say, is the most fun out of all of them, but I don't understand what it's doing in Tanakh. Take a look at source number 6. Ani Choshev, he says, I think, Shelemasha Devora Amar Betchilas Amareha, when Devora in the beginning of the song said, Shim'u Malachim Ha'azinu Rozinim Anochi Lashem Anochi Ashira. Right? She said, listen up, kings, lend an ear, counselors, I am going to sing. I am for God, I will sing. Ubarak Mbnezesh Hatak V'lo Amar Shira. So Barak said, okay, fine, you go sing. Right? It began with Vatasha Dvar Barak Ben Avi Noam. Barak's supposed to be part of the song. Then she says, well, I'm going to sing. So Barak says, okay, fine. Hine kasher ra'ashe nispashta b'dvar macherim she'ena me'etzem hashir. But then he saw her veer off into other things, like until I arose and all that, which didn't really fit what was going on. And he said, Amar Elah, Uri, 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 Devorah. He said, wake up, Devorah, get back to what you're supposed to be singing about. He's criticizing her. Rotzaloma, Re'ei Devorecha, see your words. Uri, Dabri, Shir, speak the words of the poem. Ba'al titva, b'dvarim, she'ena me'ashir. Don't get sidetracked into other stuff that isn't part of the song. And then he, Heshivata, she answered him, Kum Barak Ushaveh, get up, Barak, go take your captives. Rotzaloma, Malach Alochia Chosia, Malachas Hashir, Haro'ui, Bam Yuchadelai. Why are you telling me how to do this poem? That's my job. Right? I do that, I do it well. You go do your job. You go out and be a general. Go take captives.
Well, it does.
Which he couldn't even do unless she was by his side. So
right.
I don't think they're married.
Right. Well, to me, actually, that's very well. They sound like a married couple. They sound exactly like an old married couple. He's going to tell her how to sing, and she's going to tell him how to manage the battle. Yeah.
He's going for the mother hen. Is that over at this point? Why is he going back to the field?
Because he's taking the captives at the end, the stragglers.
No.
Taking the spoils, taking the stragglers. The battle is clearly over, because otherwise she can't be singing about what Yael did. My big question on it, while this is entertaining reading, is would they have put that into Tanakh? Back and forth
between
showing
the relationships
here.
The story is
there we go. Showing the relationship.
You
got what you wanted. It took a while. You got
and they're never good, by the way. They're never good.
This is the problem. You should catch the parenting shear that I gave. But that's the point that Barbanel sees here is that it's because we're dealing with a line that just doesn't fit.
They translate it as give praise to Bara, give praise to Bara.
Yeah, I think that's following the lines of Rashi, which isn't surprising because they generally do in the art scroll. It's following the lines of Rashi that it's saying sort of a call to Nevuah. And the Nevuah in context here, much of it has been Baruch Hashem, you should bless Hashem. So I think that's what leads to that. Okay. Regardless of what she's doing in that intermediate line, is it just a nice statement about now I'm going to give prophecy, or is it a she's trying to get back her ability to see and to sing, or whether it's actually this back and forth between her and Barak? She now is going to describe the battle, and the key theme that she's going to have here is the problem of the Jews seeing themselves as a nation, and this is a theme we've talked about since Sefer Yehoshua. We talked about the problem of the tribes all going off on their own, needing to settle their own space, and no longer seeing themselves as part of a nation. We had that in terms of the 2.5 tribes as they head out east, right? And then they build that altar that's meant to demonstrate we are part of the Jewish people, because they're afraid that someone's going to say that they're not. We had it in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, where we talked about the question of who's going to fight first and who is going to help somebody else to fight. This is an ongoing issue for the Jewish people, recognizing themselves as one nation. And that's going to be the theme here, the question of, so who fought and who decided to sit this one out? And it's going to be a fascinating thing as we go through it. I tabled it for you on the sheet to keep track. And you'll see how it plays out. So the psukim go as follows. Pasuk Yud Gimel. I'm reading it the mainstream way to read this pasuk. Malbim has another way to read this pasuk. But Az Yirad Sarid La'adirim Am. Then, when we waged battle and we were successful, the Sarid. Sarid is a remnant, right? The remnant of Israel. When the Sarid descended, or controlled would be the other way to take Yirid, La'adirim Am, the mighty ones among the nation. And again, there are different ways you could read this line. You could read it as, then the remnant of the nation ruled over the mighty ones. Hashem yirad li bagiborim. Hashem gave me this power among or over the mighty. Mini Ephraim. From Ephraim. Sharsham ba'amalek. Their root was among Amalek. Acharecha Binyamin ba'amamecha, after you, Binyamin, with your nations, with your forces. Mini Machir, from Machir, Yardu Mechokikim. There's the Mechokikim again. The leaders descended. Umizvulun Moshchim Beshevet Sofer. And from Zvulun, the people who draw the scribal pen. These are all good guys in this pasuk. Each of the four we have mentioned here, Ephraim, Binyamin, Machir, who is from Menashe, and Zvulun, all of them came to fight. So we're happy with all of them. But let's go back and break down the phrasing that was used. Ephraim, whose root is in Amalek. What does that mean? We don't want Jews to have a root in Amalek. That's a bad thing.
They fight against them.
When does Ephraim fight against Amalek?
Yehoshua.
Right, but he died, you were saying?
I was just going to say Joshua's first battle, I think.
Was Amalek, and Yahushua is from Ephraim. So your root was in Amalek, meaning your first leader, right, the Nasi, the of Ephraim, is the one who fights Amalek. Dan Mikra offers another explanation that Ephraim has the area of Har Amalek, where the Amaleki lived, where they were on a mountain, so fine, that's another explanation. But Ephraim is praised, and then Binyamin Ba'amamecha. So either Binyamin came to join in with their forces, a simple read, or if I take Ephraim as a reference to Yahushua, who fought Amalek, who's the next one who fights Amalek? Shaul, who is from Binyamin, right? Shaul is from Kish, Ishimini, right? As Mordechai would later be known, from that line of Kish as well. So Binyamin is going to fight Amalek with their masses, and here she is predicting that. That's prophecy then. Machir's Mekokakim as well. So here's an interesting question. She's praising Machir's group who came. Which side of the Yarden is Machir from? What do you mean?
Menashe? Is he Menashe?
Machir is Menashe.
So he's from the other side.
How do we know?
Oh, we don't know. There's half of Menashe.
We do know. Ulamachir Nasati is HaGilad, the Chumash says. I gave the Gilad to Machir. Gilad is the eastern side of the Yarden. So that makes Machir here, and this is what Radak says, somebody who came from across the Yarden. That's going to be a little bit of a problem later, because we're going to see what Pasuk that may criticize Gilad for not showing up, depending on how you read it. According to that view, there must be members of Machir who are West Menashe. Right, in Israel on the western side of the Yarden. There are two different ways you could take it. But I think the dominant read is, as Radak says, that that Machir came from across the Yarden, and Zebulun who draw the pen of the scribe, a reference either to being learned or to being leaders. Those are your basic two options there. Okay, those are the good ones. You now see on your sheet, I gave you four, right? The top first four who are praised, the question mark only being for West versus East Menashe, is, which one is it? But fundamentally, those are the four good ones. Then you get more good ones in Pasuk Tesvav. This Sarai and my officers, Sarai doesn't have to mean my officers, it can mean officers in general. Yisachar, with Yisachar, im Devorah, there with Devorah. V'yisachar kain barak ba'emek shulach beraglav. We're going to pause there. That phrase is a difficult one to translate. Out of curiosity, what do your additions have?
Into the valley he was sent on his feet.
No. There's, because you're after... No, I said before that. After it says Yisachar is with Devorah, then...
So with the rest of Yisachar with Barak.
Okay, so some of Yisachar is with Devorah, some of Yisachar is with Barak, and they go into the valley on foot. That's one way to take it. That's a Rashi approach. What's the other way? Anybody have anything different? Nope? Okay. Well, the other way that some of the commentators take it, and that's Radak's approach, is that Yisachar went with Devorah, and so did Barak. It's sort of a slap at Barak. Yeah, it's Sarai Yisachar and Devorah. Yisachar came with Devorah, and Yisachar came Barak, and also Barak went with Devorah. And then Ba'emek Shulach Baraglav, he was sent on foot down into the valley when Devorah said to him, "Go down from the mountain and go fight." So that would be the other way to take it. But yeah, I think the dominant read is that it's saying that some of Yisachar is with Devorah, and some of them are with Barak. Why would some of Yisachar be with Devorah? Who asked them to do that?
But it says here, the leaders were, and the rest, the leaders of Yisachar were with Devorah.
The leaders of Yisachar were with Devorah. Who are the leaders of Yisachar? What's the classic role of Yisachar?
Learning.
They are credited with being the Sanhedrin. It's all based on a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. It's Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. It talks about them as Yod-Ei Bina Li'itim. They knew with understanding, they knew the times. They would set the calendar. So the scholars from Yisachar, they go with Devorah, and the rest of them go with Barak to fight, and they go running in on foot. Meaning they're so eager that they just come running in, they want to join the battle as well. Now we see Reuven. Reuven does not fare so well. She says, continuing in Pasuk Tesvav, Biflagos Reuven. Plagot, the way I've seen plagot translated, it's a reference to the pastures, the places where their tents are, explanations along those lines. Biflagot Reuven Gedolim Chik Kelev. Out among Reuven's tents, you have people who are doing a lot of thinking. They're wondering, do I go, do I not go, who's going to win? Maybe I should go. And she turns to them with criticism and says, Lama yashavta bein hamishpisayim? Why did you sit among the pastures? Lishmoa shrikos adarim. To hear the cries of the sheep. That's one way to take it. Alternatively, to hear the cries of the battle and not go to help. You're trying to figure out who's winning. Liflagos Reuven. These tents of Reuven. Gedolim chikrei lev. Yeah, they're good thinkers out there. Reuven. These people who are just, you know, sitting out the battle. She doesn't like Reuven. Reuven did not come. Now, Reuven is also, of course, on the eastern side of the Yarden. Right? Reuven, like Menashe, like Gad, is on the eastern side of the Yarden. So now we get to the other pasuk that I mentioned related to Menashe. Gilad be'ever ha'yarden shachen. Gilad dwells on the other side of the Yarden. Before we continue the pasuk, Gilad is on the other side of the Yarden. Gilad could be a reference to Gad as well as East Menashe, right? And you could read this in two different ways. What are the two ways you could read that line? Two ways you could read this. They didn't show up would be one way. They sat on the other side of the Yarden. What's the other way? That doesn't make any sense. Let's take a look at source number 7, please, what Radak does with it. Radak says, V'halo machir omer shabala milchama. It said that machir came to war. Right? We read that just a few sentences ago. U'machir avi Gilad. And machir is the father of Gilad. Ve'eretz ha-Gilad, the base machir. And the land of Gilad is the household of machir. That's who owns it. K'mo sha'amar reitenes ha-Gilad le-machir be-menashe. That's one of the places in which the Torah says it. It's multiple times. That Hashem gave the Gilad to machir. V'yesh lefaresh. You could explain. Kimasha amar Gilad be'eber ha-Yarden shachen. That when it says Gilad dwelled east of the Yarden, Al Beis Yair ben Menashe Amar. It's not talking about Machir, it's talking about another member of the household, Yair, who's also the son of Menashe. He has more than one child, Menashe. Shegam Hu Hayachelko Beretz HaGilad. He also was in the Gilad. In other words, Machir showed up. Yair did not show up. And that makes sense. Because why else did you single out Machir as having shown up? With all the other ones, you named the Shevet. Why did it say, and Machir came, Mini Machir, which is in Mini Menashe? The fact that you singled out Machir suggests that that others from Menashe did not show up. They stayed on the eastern side of the Yarden. For those who didn't like the geography and stuff, I hope you're okay. For those who didn't like the geography part of Sefer Yoshua. But that's the first approach for why for the criticism of Gilad. The answer is some of Menashe came. Some of them did not. However, he then offers another approach, which I think rings true. V'yesh lefaresh od, you could also explain. Kimasha amar Gilad be'eber ha'yarden shachin. When it says Gilad lived east of the Yarden, or stayed east of the Yarden, hu derech timiha, it's an expression of shock, a challenge to Reuven. She's still criticizing Reuven. V'omer l'Reuven, she says to Reuven, Lama yashavta b'beisach ha'blabasa l'milchama? Why'd you sit at home? And you didn't come to battle, right? You're listening to the bleeding of the sheep. Gilad asa kain, kemosha asisa ata, v'yasha v'shachan be'ver ha'yardain. Gilad also settled east of the Yarden. Halo charad uba lazer l'machemes Yisrael. And yet he showed up. This is part of the rebuke. V'ata lama asisa kain. So why'd you do as you did? I tend to think that read, you know, works well. She's saying, Reuven, you have no excuse. If you're going to tell me you were on the east, of the eastern side of the Yarding, so is Gilead, and they made it here. So that's her criticism. Why didn't you stand up for the rest of the Jewish people? So that God, who is not mentioned by name at all in the song, God is part of the Gilead conversation. So either God came along with Machir, and we're happy with God, or God is part of Gilead, who stayed on the other side of the Yarden, in which case they're being criticized. We don't know whether God is a good one or not a good one in this. We do know that God was always the classic warrior tribe. They were always considered the big warriors, so that I would hope that they, you know, came to battle. Okay. We're not done. We got more Shvatim here. V'dan, we're in the end of Pasuk Yitzayim. V'dan, lama liyagur aniyos. Dan, why exactly are you dwelling on boats? Now, do you remember where Dan lived? That would be, that's a tall order. Yeah?
No.
Sorry?
We also have one spot on one
street.
Ah, so good. Dan is in the southwest. Dan is in the southwest. However, we did find out that there's an area called Leshem, way up north by the top of the Yarden, that they also have, but they don't get this until later in Shoftim. At this stage, they don't actually have Leshem. And what she's saying is, you know what you did, Dan? You took your property and you stuck it on boats, afraid that the Jews are going to lose to Canaan, and you wanted to be able to run away. And she's saying, Dan, why is your stuff on the boats? You don't belong on the boat, you belong in battle. That's the way that that Rashi, Radak, read it. The truth of the matter is that they are southwest, like they're not that far from the Mediterranean. Hypothetically, you could suggest that they're, you know, on boats there, and what she's simply saying is, why did you stay? It's not about running away, but why were you down in the southwest with your boats? You should have come north and participated in the battle. I would think that would be a legitimate read, but Rashi and Radak don't take that view.
Why are they going to run away to? Like, where are they going?
What do you mean? If they're in the Mediterranean?
No, in the Mediterranean, but yeah.
If they're in the Yarden, just go downstream to get away from the battle.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what they would do. And then we have Asher. Asher Yashav Lechof Yamim Ve'al Mifrasav Yishkon. Asher sat by the shores, lived by the shores, and he stayed with his Mifratzim. Mifratz suggesting something that has been breached, something that's in the open. The commentators universally on this say that she's giving him an out. Meaning, I understand why Asher did not participate. Asher is way up north, right? Remember that Naphtali and Asher are the ones who are way north. And what she's saying is that he has to stay in his area by the sea, because if he doesn't, when he goes to battle, it's going to get attacked. Why they get the out and the other outlying Shvatim don't get the out, I don't know. But that's the way that the commentators take it, is that she's excusing Asher from the battlefield. And then you get Zivulun. Zivulun am cheref nafsho lamus. Zivulun was ready to die. They put their lives on the line. V'naftali, and oh, Naftali, Am Romei Sadeh, they were on the heights of the field, meaning Har Tabor.
That's where they were.
That's where they initially gathered. So she praises Zebulun and Naftali because they came to fight, and notice once again the volunteering aspect of it. Cheref Nafsho Lamut, they put their lives on the line, suggests that they went on their own to go to the battle. Who's missing from our list of Shvatim?
Shimon.
Right, Yehuda and Shimon. Yehuda and Shimon don't make the list. Why not?
Shimon was right down.
Well, Shimon is in Yehuda. Yeah. There they go hand in hand. So I expect that it's because, yeah, they're too far away. They're way down south. There isn't an expectation that they're going to show up. They get a pass on this one.
And Levi just never fights.
Well, Levi, they're not fighters, and they don't have a tribal portion to like be identified by anyway. Yeah, so Levi doesn't make the list either. Okay, so that's her description, and we see in it this problem that we have as a nation of trying to be unified and trying to fight on behalf of each other. We'll do one more pasuk just to show you this, and then we'll stop with that for now. Ba'u melachim nilchamu. Kings came to fight, not on our side. Kings came to fight on the side of Canaan, against us. Az nilchamu malchei Kenan, the kings of Canaan fought b'sa'anach, in ta'anach, al me Megiddo, on the waters of Megiddo, and besa kesef lo lakachu. They didn't even want payment. Right? Think like Ahasuerus. Right? Hakesef nasolach. You can keep your money, Haman. I don't need the money. They did not take any payment for it. They were more than happy to come along and fight against the Jews. Contrasting the Shvatim with the kings of Canaan. The Shvatim were not interested in helping out on our side. All the kings came around to help the Canaanim against us. They have a culture of volunteering. And literally volunteering. Besa kesef lo lakachu, right? They volunteered. There's that theme again. Ours didn't. There's only one little geographic issue, which is that Ta'anach and Mei Megiddo are not together.
And where's Mei Megiddo? Isn't Megiddo like...
So I didn't check a map to see what this... Right. I didn't check a map to figure out what was being referred to. I probably should have. But but Rashi says the point is that the forces of these allies ran from Ta'anach to Mei Megiddo, wherever this Mei Megiddo is. It was, you know, they covered a huge swath of land, or alternatively, they fought us in two places, some at Ta'anach and some at Mei Megiddo. That's Radak's approach.
Well, according to this map, they're next to each, close to each other, Megiddo and Ta'anach.
Well, Rashi and Radak disagree with the map.
There's no Mei. No Mayim.
Yeah, there's a map here on this page, but they don't give us Ta'anach and Megiddo. They're pointing at other things. Here. Well, that's, you're looking at the same map, yeah. I assume. I don't know what, based on their map, what is Mei Megiddo?
It's just got Megiddo. There's no Mei, there's no water anywhere.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know. Looking in the Da Mikra, which is usually good for some geographic description, he says, Yuval HaKishon uBitzosav Samuch LeMegiddo. Okay. He says that the sort of like a delta almost. You have a swampy area from the Nachal Kishon. The Nachal Kishon empties into some area by Megiddo. That's what he offers. And then he says, go back and see what he wrote in Perek Aleph Pasuk Chazayin. Okay. So what we've gotten, I think, out of this, you know, we've done much of the song. We still have more to cover next week. But we see her description of why the Jews suffered in this way. They strayed from Hashem. We see her rallying everybody to praise Hashem for the victory. We have this interlude pasuk, which may be criticism of her for the way that she, you know, took the credit for saving everybody, or it may just be a general call of, let's go, I'm going to sing now, and so on. And the description of the war, we see the problem the Jews have of not being united and not rallying on behalf of each other, whereas the Canaanim are very happy to join forces and not even ask anything for it. What we're going to continue with in next time, God willing, is nature fighting on our side. Hashem drawing on nature to fight, which is also going to draw into this volunteerism thing. Meaning that, you know, nature fights for us. They didn't need any bribe in order to go in. And then we'll talk about Yael and the her deeds and the contrast with Sisera and his supporters. We may actually, it will be good if we finish this before Rosh Hashanah. That would be very good, since that's one of the sources for the 100 shofar blasts. Is that story? So maybe we'll get to it. Okay.